And welcome, dear listeners, to this Monday session, specifically of Ulwazi, once again, where we have Mr. Francisco Neshila in studio here with us, primarily also to bring us a discussion, obviously, that much of it revolves around land. And for today's particular discussion, I'm going to hand over to him right now, but I would like Francisco just to say hello. I don't know if you want to give a shout out, Francisco, but please don't. please don't. How you doing? Welcome. Nice to meet you as well. Specifically, this is the first time we're meeting. But, yeah, specifically starting off on this Monday, you know.
Yeah. No, nice meeting you. And, thank you very much again for having me. Yes, I think it's, pretty much a jam-packed, discussion today.
Mm.
As we are going to look into the National Urban Land Policy, which a lot of people are not pretty much aware what is really happening and what is government busy doing. And we really want to give a perspective on the urban land policy and how basically it came about. Now, we all know that some time back we had the second national land conference that took place in Windhoek. And one of the preamble or the extraction of the second national land conference was that Namibia needs an urban land policy to be able to address certain aspects of land related issues. And that is basically what we are going to unpack, extracting the relevant data from the guidelines of the National Land Conference. Now, when you talk about land policy, I think one needs to appreciate in terms of to understand what were the pre-colonial aspects of policies that have taken place, since we are looking as back as the 1800s. And then while the dispositions, when you look at land dispositions, it happened around about 1884 to 1890. And then basically now in 1920, then we experienced the German settlers. And that were basically during the war process, that's when they came in. And obviously, a lot of land aspects happened there. Now, during the German, colonial era, there's something quite interesting that happened in that space. And as much as colonialization is quite a very bad thing, so we do not want to use the land issues as if it is, we want to glorify it. But there's a very important aspect that happened because the Germans were the first one to establish town lands. Mm. So which is something, and there's something that continued until today, which is part of our title deeds and land conversations. And that is probably one of the interesting aspects. They created,
urban centers, basically.
Yeah, basically they created urban centers because they knew that, for instance, farmers, they need a concentrated area to do goods, to give services to the farmers and the rural community. So that is now what really transpired during the German aspect. Then obviously, then in 1925, then obviously South Africa started encroaching into our territory. And that's now where basically they started the apartheid era aspect. That's where basically now, and that's where the segregation aspects came in.
Mm.
So the town lands was there, but then there was too much proximity between the affluent and the non-affluent people. So obviously the segregation basically started, and that is where that whole land commotion is Kakurukade Mukunda. That is basically then what happened. Then coming back to 1992, that's now where we first have our first National Land Conference, basically now to unpack some of the aspects. That's basically after that. Now they said, okay, we now have town lands, but question is, how do we guide the town lands? Then we brought in the Local Authorities Act, basically then to govern the town lands aspects in that equivalent to that space. And then obviously, moving forward, moving slightly backwards. Actually, I read now the data. I think.
No, don't worry. Don't worry. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Okay. Basically, from 1925, we then move into 1955.
Mm.
That is where the South Africans now basically took control. And basically now between 1925 to 1955, that's where the basically South African influence then came in.
Mm.
Now then, what this, and then in 1964, that's when we have the Odendaal plan.
Mm.
But now this is now the positive aspects also of this, of the apartheid aspect, because there were now a lot of land issues.
I'll just tell the listeners, you know, guys, look at it from a town planning, not from the human rights discussions.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Now this Odendaal plan.
Mm.
So there are smaller towns that were really struggling in terms of growth.
Mm.
So what the Odendaal Commission plan said, that is where your housing initiative also came about for the locals to get housing, your Katutura aspects. That's where it comes from. It's an Odendaal initiative.
Mm.
Now for areas like Chess and those areas, Beersheba, that were very much surrounded by commercial farm. Mm. So basically the Odendaal plan equally expropriated land from the white people itself to be able to establish townlands to areas that didn't have townlands since the German era, which means that they equally adopted what was good from the German land administrative perspective. So, and then they brought in that Odendaal plan. Yes, of course, there's a lot of,
so that's why we get all those village councils like Tess, like Kalkrant, like Arwap.
Yes.
All those smaller guys. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's basically an Odendaal influence, the commission that brought that about. And then obviously now then comes 1990, and that's now where we have our independence and things started, now looking up. And then 91, that's the Local Authorities Act. Then obviously the redressing of the land issues, and then came into 1992. And then moving forward to 1995, we got the Agricultural Land Reforms Act. And then obviously in 1998, we got the National Land Policy.
Yeah.
Moving into 2000, that's where we got the Communal Lands Reforms Act. All these acts now equally so they are being consolidated under the current land bill. And then obviously, to reintegrate the affected communities into the farming. So we now have the National Resettlement Policy that was drafted in 2001. While in 2012, the government, obviously now the urban pressure started coming up. Then land was very, very expensive. So there was a lot of discussions around it. And then obviously the Flexible Land Tenure Act, basically the discussions then started around that. I think it was approved somewhere. Is it in the 2000s? It's 2016 or something.
Mm-hmm.
Still needs to get my bearings correct there. Yeah. So coming into 2018, that's now where we got the new document, which we call the Urban and Regional Planning Act, that is basically governing the townlands and how it's being established as well. And that's also the time where we have the second National Land Conference. 2023-2024, the National Housing Policy was then reviewed and adopted. And then in 2025, that's it was approved in 2025. And then obviously now, 2024, that's where the National Urban Land Policy started the government introduced the Urban Land Policy.
Mm.
It has not been approved yet, but it's under discussion. It has been validated. It went through the regions and different stakeholders. Basically now what is holding it back is the implementation plan. What is the cost to implement a policy. So, and then obviously it will be then be a submission to cabinet. And subsequently to that, 2025, the government also then started the initiative of the National Spatial Development Framework. The National Spatial Development Framework, it basically deals with development concerning with mining rights, conservancies, and it cuts across.
So it basically sort of like you now were about to say, cuts across like three, the mandate of like three or four ministries.
Yeah.
From agriculture to urban and rural to environment to industries, mines and energy.
Yeah. Works.
It works and transport basically is. So it's massive.
Fisher, yes. Yeah. It's massive. And myself, I'm also very fortunate then to be part of this this team formulating the spatial development framework. And we, myself, I'm also the lead consultant in the urban and the urban land policy that we are going to discuss today. And the last aspect is basically that the ministry is also currently busy with their rural policy that is under review. The 2012 rural policy is basically currently now under review, so that people can that ministry can look into how effective it was, and what is the what will be the outcome, and what are the new proposals.
Yeah.
So and where I see where that is going, we're probably going to look into that eventually. I think the end goal is to have an act that is governing rural areas. But obviously, depending on what are the stakeholders' input and interest around that. Yeah. Now, as I said, that was basically a brief overview of the development policies since the 1800s up to 2026. As I said, the Ulwazi Show is here to give you perspective in collaboration with Eagle FM, so that you are able to understand what is happening in the country from a data development and policy perspective. Now, looking into the urban land policy, there are three strategic aspects that it was formulated, which is the generic consideration of optical to unlock access to urban land, fast-tracking land acquisition, optimizing land delivery, unlocking access to land, adopting integrated approach of development planning, promoting proactive land use development management, and sustainable urbanization. Now, these are the six thematic areas. Now, out of those six thematic areas, we then developed like 18 programs. Of this 18 programs is basically now what we're going to discuss and look into a more in-depth aspect as to what is it all about. But listeners must feel free to call in if they so wish. We are more than welcome to take your calls if there's something that you don't understand. But in the meantime, we will continue to provide the in-depth around it. Now, on point number one, the program say a comprehensive urban land information system development. Now, subsequently to this, I think it's through the social media on the platform of Eagle FM, where the mayor of the city of Windhoek highlighted that we need to make decisions that is informed by data. So meaning that we need to have the systems.
Yeah.
And as I said, Ulwazi is very much data-oriented talk show, and that is basically equally so what we are bringing forth. Now, when you do any policy or formulating a policy, one of the struggling aspects is to get access to data.
In Namibia, yeah.
Yeah.
I was so surprised. You know what, Francisco? I was so surprised about last week, man, when you highlighted the cumulative value of property sales and purchases in Oshakati. Because you will hear the investment houses in Namibia just announcing Windhoek and the coast. Yeah. Windhoek and the coast. Now, it seems like there's nothing happening anywhere else.
Yeah. And we want to change the narrative. As I said, on this platform, on this program, we have all the data countrywide any given day. Just give us a call. We will be able to assist you. If not immediately, definitely after hours, we will be able to assist you. Now, what this data system is, for instance, that we have a lot of speculators.
Yeah.
And I'm saying speculators is developers who are taking chances. They will apply land, Grootfontein, Tsume, Pondangwa, Oshakati, all over. So, and because the Namibian government is so friendly, you just draft a letter and say, I want to develop houses. And obviously the local authority.
And then you show the benevolence. I'm doing this in terms of meeting the mass housing need.
Yes.
I'm obviously going to sell it at some sort of a market price.
Yeah.
We will obviously know afterwards.
Yeah. Now, obviously any local authority to someone who wants to develop the town, so basically they take an emotional decision around it to say, no, please, we need this. Here is a letter of intent. And then they allocate you a certain portion of land with an X amount, and you can hold on to that land. If the local authority wants to revoke it, it becomes a political discussion.
Yeah.
Now, once you have such a system, so everyone who's having a letter of intent of development within the Namibian context of boundary, you will be able then to detect. So when you are having a conversation with that particular developer or entities to say, but you have all those other developments, have you done something? Why are you now interested with us? Yeah. So now once you have that integrated system, when you can, you are able to assess, I think a lot of, we can deal with a lot of, to reduce the aspects of speculation. So these guys, they become land barons and they basically hold land.
Yeah.
And that is now having all those land information systems, We can basically deal with these issues and allow development to fast track so that people are not so much, because you can't have 3 in 10 letters in 6 or 10 different towns and yet you are unable to do anything, waiting for a certain investor to come and use an intent letter to change ownership, and you basically recoup a certain founding fee per se. So this land information system is very critical. So it needs to happen across public sector and private sector. Then obviously through this system, once you have such a very, very rich, full of data, so that means also you need to have a data center that is in control of by government to ensure that data is saved and it's shared with everyone. Now, looking into the second program, which is a joint venture urban land development. Now, I really want to give credits to Ondangwa Town Council, because they became one of the first town councils to have a PPP approved for housing. I think that is really the rest of the development that we've been seeing. It's very much joint ventures. But now, we have now a blueprint established by Ondangwa Town Council, and for them to undertake the PPP aspect. And then what is also very interesting, what has been happening in the background, the City of Windhoek and the Ministry of Urban and Regional Planning also went into a debt swap, basically for land. So I think there was an X amount, maybe in excess of 300 million. And then they gave like 11 township or 15 townships to, I'm speaking under correction, to the Ministry of Urban, basically to fast track. Now, once the Ministry of Urban is in possession of this land, they will then allocate it to interested stakeholders, NGOs, to be able to fast track housing and land delivery. So, and there are big ups for such an initiative between the ministry and the city of Windhoek officials. I think it's something very commendable, and it should happen more often. And obviously, what the urban land policy then is also advocating for is to say, we should have a land acquisition task force. Yeah, and that is basically, but we should not have a task force that is there for when there is a crisis. So it must be a continuous thing, because we cannot always commission reports. Because land transaction changes very quickly. So your transaction volumes per year on a national level, you are looking into a 1.5 billion to 2 billion in terms of market value. Now, every 6 months, that the land dynamics is different. Now, there's always such a huge gap. After 5 years, it's another crisis again.
Yeah.
A new generation, they've come into the market, and obviously they are raising their voices, and the leadership needs to respond. And the quickest way to respond is to establishing a task force or a commission, as the current president has done, which is a very noble idea, but I think it should also be on a permanent basis.
Sort of like giving them like a designated office, designated staff to say, listen, churn out these reports that we know.
Yeah. Just like similar to the land board that deals very much of communal and commercial land. So we need such aspects equally so on a national level for the urban land issue. So it should become a permanent. I do hope the leadership is listening and we are moving into that direction. Then the other issue that always have been being a battle in communal areas, and as some of our listeners have been calling in, is regarding the just compensation awareness into development planning. Just compensation. So what we're saying now, I always narrated to a lady that got displaced from Ongwediva. So when she was displaced because of the urban townland expansion, she then moved into the area of Okongo. And at the time, Okongo was not
an urban settlement.
An urban settlement.
Yeah.
So it then became a town. Then this lady says, now I need to move again. So it's creating a huge displacement factor. Now, so her voice in that aspect is like, okay, where will I go now? Every time I'm accommodating urban expansion, the question is, what about us? When are we going to have a sense of belonging to say, I'm now settled and this is where I want to grow old? So now, during this process, her knowledge also and her understanding, the value of money that she was given at the time when she moved from Ongwediva, she realized that she has to work harder to bring herself back to the standard of living what she had in Ongwediva before she relocated. And these are issues that sometimes it's not being discussed in the different platform. And you will see now there's a lot of fightbacks between the town councils and the surrounding rural community. But because the government also implemented the revised policy of the compensation policy that is being revised. Now, I do not know what is the current bill in terms of the compensation policy standing. But we were very fortunate enough to have done an establishment in Ndiona, in the Kavango East region. And one of the key issues during that stakeholders engagement was that we are still waiting for compensation. So why should you give you more land to develop if you have not even settled
the first particular responsibility?
Yes.
Yeah.
So the government is really doing its best to address these issues, but this wage bill of compensation is quite high because some of the areas don't have the money. So, and government needs to make provision within their budgetary allocation.
So it's more like the constituency or the regional office basically that has to carry that burden.
Yes.
Yeah.
So and really big ups to the officers in the regional offices. They are dealing with quite a lot, and we don't thank them enough as to how we should the work they are doing in those spaces. And I think equally so that the professionals must also be in cognizance that let's rather integrate people into that urban settlement than rather to relocate them.
Mm.
Yeah. And I will get to the land ownership aspect later into the program for better overview. Now, on point number 5, where in the programs is the urban land development and financing. So what we're proposing in the urban land policy is to say that the local authorities must be given the chance to raise their capital.
Mm.
So now the question is, how do you then raise capital? So you can either register a bond through the statutory processes. You do a pitch, you register 200 million rand bond, or you can then appoint a venture capital or this investment manager to be able to allow you. Now, if the local authority have a very small township and the development of that township is run about, say, let's say it's 10 million to service the land and all that. Now, any member of the community in that particular town, you can come off your ATM card and you go to the finance department at the town council and you take your ATM card and you swipe your 2000 and then basically you get a share certificate so that the community must have access to effective participation in the land development, irrespective on how much you have. So if people at an early stage start participating in that space, you are able then to build leverage and equity for you to be able to purchase a property at the later stage when the time is right for you to purchase. So those are the provisions that we are trying to make into the urban land policy, that everyone in the community must be able to participate irrespective of how much you have.
Yeah.
Every dollar must account to something. This is our country. And the best thing is we can only learn from countries like Ethiopia that develop their dam through their diaspora investment scheme. So we can similarly do the same thing. Or we can develop cooperatives through the Bank of Namibia and have that process going. So there is an initiative basically to unlock financing, looking at different mechanisms than rather than going to DBN and other commercial bank. But perhaps community savings can also then partake to develop their own spaces. So, and then obviously now we're also looking at accelerating urban land delivery. I think this basically then boils down. There's always issue that land delivery is very slow. But when you look at the Urban and Regional, the 2018 Act, it really makes provision for local authority to be able to fast track land delivery. So which any local authority that then have authority becomes an appointing planning authority, you are able to approve your own land application. It doesn't need to go to the Ministry of Urban and Regional Planning. And Swakopmund and Walvis Bay are one of those towns that are basically now in the forefront that is trying to championing this. And we need to really look into the land delivery reports coming from Walvis Bay and Swakopmund as to how effective that will then be. So these are all provision which government have really put in place, even though the process might sound a bit slow, but the act has been there since 2018. So all the local authorities are practically now aligning to fast track this process. And our current system, basically our performance is based on the research. We are 50% below target in terms of approval. But once Walvis Bay, Swakopmund and the city of Windhoek comes to that status, believe me, there will be changes. And this will, if equally so, trickles down onto the market value and into the supply and demand issue. So the initiative is there. The systems, they look if it is very slow, but government has been doing a lot of work and hence this program is here to really articulate those issues and to for the listeners to be aware as to what government is really doing. But maybe just to cut short, we probably, Namibia probably need a policy conference.
Because another one.
No. The policy conference.
Because I'm asking about the second land conference.
Yeah.
Because it's still the same resource.
Yeah. Now, the policy conference is basically every ministry needs to come and articulate the policies within their structures.
Okay.
So, and inform the public so that everybody knows what is really happening.
Yeah.
And I think for me, that is key. Not a land conference.
Mm.
It's basically to say, what is the government's agenda on policy?
Mm.
Because we have a lot of different policies there. There's an environmental strategic plan that has been put up. There's a lot of things happening and which are very positive initiatives.
Mm.
But the public needs to be aware for them to be able to participate. And I think that is very critical in terms of, development. Now, obviously, in the urban land policy, we're talking about urban land value capture. Urban land value capture is to basically to allow local authorities to be able to assess land based on its value, and what it's able to do. Like in the northern areas, you got a lot of mudlands, which you called Oshana.
Yeah.
So those areas, they are good for maybe rice production and all that. And that land use then needs to be utilized for people to then participate in those in that aspect as to and help basically how to control the flood areas with productive use of that. So that those are the type of research and investigation which the urban land policy is encouraging local authorities as to how to do land value capture, even that the land looks as if you can't utilize it because it's a flooding area, but perhaps something can be done.
Mm.
Maybe it's fit enough for aquaculture, maybe to deepening the area so we can grow fish in it and many other activity. And then obviously on point number 8, we are looking at enhancing land registration and tenure incremental aspects. So what we're saying here is that the government is doing a very good initiative around the land registration, but the tenure aspect is a problem. Yeah. So people don't have title deeds. Families part on squabbles happening around families regarding that. Luxembourg program that is in Rundu and Katima Mulilo. It was funded by GIZ, I think 1996, and only 20% of those people living in those areas under the Luxembourg program got title deeds. So the rest of them don't have.
Mm.
Now, if you then want to...
And that's now in the town limits.
Within the town boundaries.
Yeah.
Now, if you want to do a rezoning application in those areas because you do not have ownership, that means ownership is still with the even though you have paid for that portion.
And even though you've lived there for more than 10 years.
It's not even 10 years. We are looking now
at 30 years.
Basically 30 years.
Yeah.
And there's no title deeds at all. So, and Rundu is one of those towns that really need a huge investment in terms of infrastructure because some of the areas only have running water.
Mm.
Some of the areas only have electricity, so the sewer systems. So there's a lot that needs
there's to... There's even an area, sorry Francisco, there's an area when I visited back there in 2016 that they can dig just even, not even a meter, then they hit the water table.
Yes.
Because in some cases it's... What's this branching out, this extension?
Is it Soyema?
It's Soyema. This one that branches out as you come from, if you come from the western direction.
Western direction.
From, let's say, from the Oshakati Thongwe Diverse, in Kurinkuru's direction.
Okay. That is not Soyema.
You come in. Yeah. Right after the...
No, it is Soyema. Yeah, one is Ndama.
Yeah, because Ndama is on the other side.
Yes.
And the one guy that lived there literally said it's a situation of some houses are not approved by the... Or some constructions cannot be approved by the town council because it's either that the foundation will be too deep and then the house starts sinking.
Yeah.
Or if they build a wall for the boundary wall, then it's also a problem because it's not the kind of soil... That can actually give that, what you call it, that binding solid, feature, basically.
Yes, and that is also when you look at, I think it was the minister of Mr. Sankwasa, who Honorable Sankwasa, regarding the ground erosion.
He has a superpower. We labeled it here at Eagle FM.
Yeah,
he's Sankwasa nicest, you know.
Yeah. So, and because of this poor storm water planning in Rundu.
Yeah.
So the water streams, when it rains, because it's all going towards the river, and that's why the development close to the river, basically sitting on the higher banks, they start to suffer. So the storm water aspect, yeah. So now this is all one of the 10-year issues, and of which most of the local authorities, they move into titles or occupation certificate or title certificate some sort, but a lot still needs to be done in that spaces. And basically now that basically then perhaps while we are at it, so and in the urban land policy, we then introduce a concept called the blockchain technology. Now, blockchain technology, then basically what we are saying there, that the local authorities, instead of going to the deeds office, the transaction between the local authority and the first landowner, that a title deed needs to be issued. Because there is no risk between the local authority and the first landowner. But if that property goes to a second transaction, obviously your conveyances then can come in.
Yeah.
I know this is quite a contentious issue regarding the conveyances and the legal fraternity, but I think we are looking into the low cost really to speed up the process so that these people can really get over the cross the line on land ownership. I know the government tried and it was taken to court by the private sector, I think in 2015, but we need to say, guys, at some point government must be allowed to do something for the people. So, and I think we, this initiative, we now do hope that the government is going to expand on it as to how can we basically implement the blockchain technology so that we can do mass registration. So when we talk about blockchain technology, obviously we are now talking in the aspects of AI to produce those title deeds and obviously connect them to the and connect them to the deeds office, of which the accounting offices now will have that power to give that ownership and yeah. So this is just ideas. Even though once the policy is implemented, obviously there needs to be we need to get the right experts to expand on it so that we understand what is the implementation strategy on it.
Yeah.
So, but once it's a policy, so it means that even the public can come up with idea as to how it can be done, and government will work around the legal aspects to ensure that people have ownership. So to address the land tenure issue. Now, the other aspect on point number 9, we are now talking about the integrated development planning. Now, integrated development planning is that we shouldn't plan in isolation. So what we currently seen in the Namibian domain, development domain, is that you find the town planner does a township establishment, and once it's done and approved, he then gives it over to the engineer. Now, the engineer won't be able to give effective input into the layout because he's already constrained because he's dealing with an approved township already. So the planning, every township that needs to be planned must have a conceptual input, must the engineering report must be attached to it. So we need to make it a must. And then obviously, so the urban design element also equally needs to accompany the township establishment so that we can also improve the ambience of our developments. Then, because planning, I always tell when people ask me, what is the difference between a town planner and an urban designer? I always take a lady that walks into a salon. And that's a town planner. When she walks out, she's an urban designer. because with all the shades and, you know.
Mm. And so that, she's been designed. I'm sorry, ladies. Yeah. I'm sorry for that. Yeah. No? But yeah. She's been designed. And before that, there was planning.
Yeah.
So in what you just explained now, Francisco, it's basically the planning takes precedence over design. Because yes. Design comes afterwards.
Yeah. But it needs to be now integrated.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you need now, to give the distinction. You know, when a lady put on powder and shades, you know, the face looks extremely pleasant, yeah, to look at. So now it's the same thing. And
Francisco, you're putting us in hot water.
Yeah. And it's the same thing. And that is basically what urban design do. Yeah. And that's why when you travel to other countries that embrace urban design, and that's, you know, the feeling, what the city makes you feel. That is the ambience of urban design. And I just want people to be able to understand, for you to appreciate what urban design is. And that is something that all our towns and city is lacking in city urban.
But before you continue, Francisco, we'll quickly take a short break. We'll come back after it.
Join us for the Ehangano Concert Volume 2 with Ali Tobias. Experience an unforgettable evening featuring songs from her latest album, A Bilo, performed live with a full band. Special guest appearances by Tate Buti, DA, Paige, and One Accord. All proceeds from the event will go towards supporting the Our Lady Orphanage. The event takes place on 4 July 2026 at the National Theatre of Namibia. Tickets are available on Web Tickets Namibia for $450. Don't miss this powerful night of music, inspiration, and giving back. Ehangano Concert Volume 2. See you there.
And we come back, dear listeners, from the quick break. And just where we left off before the break, Francisco was just highlighting to us, but primarily what planning and design basically contribute in terms of an urban dimension. Francisco, just taking it from there.
We need now really to rush through the program. And as I said, the program is here to stay, even though we're rushing through the urban land policy. There's many more episodes. We are here. It's a new program for the radio. Now, looking into sustainable livelihood, obviously this also then intertwine with urban design, integrated planning, basically how communities need to live and to bring more young people in our communities. And this basically then creating a very vibrant communities, having a lot of public spaces. Now, in terms of public spaces, what the urban land policy is trying to do is to define it.
Mm.
So what is it? When you say a public open space, for what is it? Is it for sport? Is it for recreation? Is it for picnics? And is it a water park? It must be properly defined so that it's not an open-ended. And we're seeing that developers take a lot of chances to close off these public open spaces and do housing development. We've seen this happening. I think we need to put, I think the minister needs to put an end to it.
Mm.
Once it's a public open space, then it will be as such.
So this is now for what do they call those things? Because there was a discussion even last year by the city of Windhoek, where it was here around October, September primarily public spaces and bringing in more play parks, children's parks, those things for the, because basically if you look at Windhoek's layout, there would be like one play park situation, but it's just like, you know, for better colloquial terms, like a wah. It's just there.
Not properly defined.
Yeah. Yes. And it's also so small. So now you need to wonder, you know, is this meant for the public or not?
Yeah. Now sometimes when developers do development and there's a water course running through their property.
Mm.
So they then register the area of the water course. They then register it as a public open space so that they are able to get more land for development. And that is something that needs to be corrected.
So a natural feature, which might be the river, would be then registered as a...
Because it's running through your property.
Through the property.
And this is maybe something, being a valuer myself, that if there's a natural course running through any property, we shouldn't utilize the entire square meterage of that as to say it's the market value because of the size.
Mm.
It must be market value less the
that public feature. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we need to. That is a discussion for another day. But we will definitely need to look into it. Obviously, we are also encouraging smart and compact cities. Yeah, basically, smart city people mostly associate it with technology, but it's more to do with your infrastructure, your transport, movement, walkability, livability. Not very much to do with technology, but just the ease to move to do business. You live close to work and that efficiency becomes a very critical aspect. That is more in a nutshell. And obviously, to digitize everything, when you want something from the city, everything is there. You just send and you communicate with ease. The program number 12, the urban design and management. Obviously, we have touched a bit in an extent over it. So I wouldn't want to, but as I said, you can always come back. The urban land policy is available on our social media. I will post it on Eagle FM for the public to download and to have a look at it. And if you want to post questions, please always feel free. Then you have strategic growth zones. The strategic growth zone, again, you've mentioned the NDP 6 aspect. So the economic zone. So we want also community to apply for their own economic zone within their areas based on their strength of, let me say, like, for instance, in Rundu, because the wood carving, you do a local economic zone for wood carvers where basically they trade and they got tax brackets when they're operating in that a localized EPZ zone per se. Then the one of the critical aspects is a small scale rental. Small scale rental, we all know that there is a, we are all anticipating the outcome of the rent control bill. So, but what we are saying in the urban land policy that if you have any open space in your current single residential property, the urban land policy then advocate that you need to build. You can build 3 units. Which a unit with a minimum of 23 square meters for bachelor units, and basically that you are able to build more than 3 units that could give you in excess of 75 square meters without going to do a town planning rezoning application, but you can do it through a consent. Now, Wolfish Bay municipalities already have this in place, and they are really working hard to encourage people to build units to address the rental issues. Now, when you do such development, you also then bring in young people into different communities because they would want to rent there and all that, and it also then create that vibrancy. And then we address the high rental issues as well. The blockchain technology, we spoke about it. The gated communities. So what we basically pick up in our research and the complaints that has been registered with the Ministry of Urban is that gated communities, they use levies to pay off their development, which is wrong. It's not supposed to. And obviously, when you buy in a gated community, you then adopt the contract or to be it's penalized. I really don't want to mention the communities on radio, but a lot of people have experienced very, very bad experience. You buy a property, then you are bound into a contract, but then the developer has the ultimate right to make the final decision. So which means that democracy has not been exercised. So it's basically when you go to an AGM, it becomes developer plus one. Whatever the community is proposing.
Even though you own the unit.
Yeah. Yes. And this has been happening. So now what we are saying under the urban land policy, for every development gated community, all the rules and regulation of that gated community must be approved by the ministry. And equally so, all the levies, in terms of how it was spent, those financial reports needs to be submitted to the ministry, so that we are able to assess that the people's money is not being abused, so that it's being used to be basically to fund the required infrastructure for their area. Then obviously on point number 17, we're looking at participatory involvement in terms of settlement upgrading. People must have their rights to dictate as to how the settlement should go, not purely be imposed by professionals and the local councillors as to what is best suitable for them. And then on the last one, the agri-village development. So what we are saying here is that there's too many towns that are popping up. Yeah, there's too many towns that are popping up, and we need to avoid a lot of towns, because it becomes a financial burden to the government. Of course, for every town, new councillor, new political system, and all that, and the Ministry of Urban is continuously just growing, and this could become troublesome. So what we then saying, and the example I always try to make use of, you're looking to your into a situation like on Dangwa and on Nipa. That was not supposed to happen. I mean, it's really...
I don't want to chime in there with a joke, Francisco, because I also looked at Onipa last and I was like, are they trying to be a town separate from Ondangwa, or are they a neighborhood of I'm sorry, Onipa, if you live in Onipa.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Then on the other side, you on the other side of Oshakati, you have Oshikuku. On the other side of Ondangwa and Helau Nafidi, you now have Onga that also became a settlement.
Yeah.
So we need to be careful with that. Now there is the aspects of Oshirambo also wants to become a settlement. So we need to be careful of those issues, what is really happening. So in this, what we then say that from the urban center, from the core center of any local authority within a 50-kilometer radius, so you can basically create an urban node. Anything that is behaving like an urban node. Now what we're trying to
like
say...
Like Vantu basically.
No. So when you are in the north in rural areas, you find an area, there's a hospital, there's a school,
there's a police station.
There's a police station.
A magistrate's court.
No, there's no magistrate court. But it's something it's something that is behaving like an urban
node, yeah.
So and people congregate there to get services. So you that specific area, you then make it an
urban
urban node, and you then integrate it to the closest local authorities within a 50-kilometer radius.
Mm.
So then you avoid things that are just popping up, meaning it becomes an island of that particular local authority.
Mm.
So in that way, those people are getting now proper services. The NEMPOs can come there and all that, because it's an organized node, but it serves the rural community. So that is the kind of conversation that we need to look into. And that is a space that we really need to move to. Now, one of the key aspects what the urban land policy is also addressing, it's basically take its precedent case study from the Floskasbergen settlement between Sotomon and Hentis Bay.
Yeah.
That community took government to court and they won the case for private ownership.
Yeah.
So previously into the regional act doesn't make provision for private land ownership into
a town,
into settlements.
Yeah, into an urban
so
settlement.
So it's only on leasehold.
Yeah.
So that community fought back and then they got the right to purchase the land, of which a valuation roll was done and purchases took place, and now they are paying rate on taxes formally. Because of that already, because of that precedent study that is there.
Mm.
So anyone, you could use that argument, because it's a supreme judgment, you could use that argument to say that I want to buy my land in a settlement, but obviously you need to go through the processes for you to be able to do that. Mm. You get your own value so that you things are done accordingly.
Mm.
But now the urban land policy and the regional act that is being proposed makes provision for that. That is going now to create a lot of ownership in a lot of areas. Now, in a case like, for instance, WIS, where it was just recently it got integrated as a town, but it was degraded to a settlement. So there was a lot of confusion. Now it was a settlement with private ownership. So basically it now went back because of the mining activity that is happening. So basically the urban land policy is also trying to redress the land ownership and also to steer development in that space. Meaning that, but now the most beautiful aspects of it, of which government, from the government's initiative, is say, if you do not have the money, you don't have to buy now. You can still operate on your leasehold agreement. And that's a beautiful thing. So until such then, or your kids, once they have the funds, then they are able to buy the property in the settlement to private ownership. And that is really the one of the aspects which government is really, really addressing. So yeah, it's a lot of information that that I really shared in a very, very short span. But I do hope, please go listen to it. Send us your WhatsApp your questions on our WhatsApp line. We will definitely respond to you, or on our social media pages. Please, we're more than welcome to have this conversation going. But what we're really trying to say is that we're not here to say to promote the interest of government, but we just want to share what is out there and what government is doing for the listeners to be able to appreciate what work has been done in that development space.
100%. And just on that particular note, Francisco, like you said, we did compact. We did compress it into this 1 hour. It does bring us up to the end, dear listeners, for this afternoon's particular program of Ulwazi, which, if you did not know by now, which is 2 weeks later, it is knowledge, or to know, in Zulu. Just to let you know again. So, you now know. There is a lot more, because definitely Francisco has a lot more to share. But just from your side, Francisco, any last particular thoughts?
Yeah, maybe just to introduce our next town through my manager here, MD. we are going to unpack. We said now this time we are moving to the south. We are going to unpack Hietman's Werp on Saturday. I think the listeners from the south, please don't be left behind. Tune in. Listen to your data and your performance. We are going to give you a 10-year horizon perspective and unpack developments within the Kietman's Werp townlands.
100%. And on that note, dear listeners, we'll be back. We're quickly stepping into a short break, and we'll be back after the break, coming back with the home run here on your Monday session. On that note, this has been Ulwazi. Thank you once again, Francisco, for coming in and for sharing all that information. You know, my brain feels like it got now another software update. But yeah, just let the listeners know again. Saturday, it's the Kietman's Werp.
Yeah, discussion. Saturday is Kietman's Werp from 10 o'clock up to 11. Please tune in, ask your questions. And, don't specifically just for Kietman's. If you have other land related issues, we are basically here to assist you. On that note.
100%. On that note, dear listeners, we'll come back right after this short break.